We're going to be a duet tonight, and it's a pleasure being here. It's a long trip. Some of you may not know, but I'm a grandchild of the OU BSU. About 1971 or 72, I'm not sure, one of those years, a fella by the name of Jack Owens was sent or went to Iowa State from here. And it was during that time that he met this hippie farm boy and led him to Christ, and that was me. And so, and you know, I have some roots here, even though I've never been here before. I mean, I've been visiting here, but I've never been for a meeting or anything like that. And then, in a very real way, Pam has roots here because there was a girl, well, Judy Smith was here, wasn't she, Sandra? Yeah, Judy Smith, and then Pam met her at Kansas State University. So Pam's a Kansan, and I'm an Iowegian. And we live in Nebraska now. So we have many states represented here. Just in, actually, we're an inter-BSU marriage, see. And we have Iowa State, Kansas State, and University of Nebraska. That's where we met. So inter-university marriage. And so tonight, kind of our basis or our format is Pam's going to be sharing a little bit about her dating experience and some things that she learned. And then I'm going to be sharing a few things that I've learned. So Pam, why don't you come share?
First of all, this nasal sound isn't my normal voice tone, but I've had a cold, so please bear with me. This whole area of romance, dating, whatever you want to call it. In Zambia, we spent a year in Africa, and they called it observing because they had never, they don't do dating. So anyway, actually, we termed that for them and made up that name of observing. But this whole area, I think, often is one that when we become Christians, we think we ought to have it all together and know everything there is about dating and do it perfectly. And yet here we've heard about the world's viewpoint of dating and romance and marriage for so long that I don't think we should expect ourselves to have it all together, but to be real learners from God and from others who have learned things from God about this area of our lives. And it took me quite a while to learn what God had to teach me. But it wasn't until I was a freshman in college that I became a Christian. And it was only a week after that that I met a guy that lived in a dorm beside my dorm at Kansas State. And it was through a friend of mine. She set me up. And, of course, he had all the requirements. You know, the first requirement was he was great looking, you know. And the second requirement, he was a nice guy. So, you know, what more could you want? And, again, I was a very young Christian, so I didn't know much about who to date and who not to date. And so we began to get to know each other and spent quite a lot of time together. At the same time, I was really starting to grow in my Christian life. I was attending a Christian group on campus and involved in Bible study and fellowship and just spending time with God and just kind of getting to know who He was and what He was like. And, you know, verses like Matthew 6:33 about seeking first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. And so I was hearing these things, and yet I was dating this guy, and the whole thing that started coming to me was, have I ever really put God totally first in my life? And have I ever given over this relationship? Well, I kind of, you know, would say, oh, I've given that over, you know, it's yours, Lord. But inside I was just holding on to this one area of my life, because I was afraid if I let go of it and gave it to God, He'd take this guy away, and I really liked him a lot. And so we dated about 3 months, and I just came to a point where I just had to make a decision. Was I going to give God everything, even this relationship, or was I just going to hold on? And I remember struggling, and I'm kind of crying off and on for a week. My mother thought I was going crazy. But just being afraid to give this area of my life to God. And so finally, I knew Jeremiah 29:11, where Jesus says, for God says, for I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare, not for calamity, to give your future and a hope. So I knew he wanted the best for me. So it was then that I really committed that area of my life to him. And I went and told Danny that I had been putting him first in my life and rather than God. And this seems strange, but we continued to date, even though we weren't really going in the same direction. But again, I was a young Christian, and I thought he was a Christian. And so I would get him involved in all these, come to this Bible study and do this and kind of pull him, you know, and push him, and that doesn't work. And he indicated making a commitment to Christ, and yet there was just, he never seemed to have God first in his life. But I felt like I loved him. He felt like he loved me. We dated for 2 years. I helped him get to know a lot of the guys in the BSU there, and he became roommates with Christians, and I thought, oh, this will do it, you know. And he'd pray sometimes, and I'd be so excited that he was praying, you know, and he's really going to go for God. Well, anyway, we got engaged, and this whole semester before we were supposed to get married, I just didn't have peace. I would study. I mean, it's amazing that I ever made it through that semester of school. I know it was God's grace. You know, I'd be studying, and every other line was, should I marry him or shouldn't I? Should I marry him or shouldn't I? And I was in a Bible study with the BSU director's wife there, Sandy Anderson, and it was all on marriage, you know. And we'd go, and we'd learn all these things about marriage, and I kept thinking, is this going to be the way it's going to be with our relationship? And, you know, this kind of confused me, and I was concerned. And she, you know, when you get engaged, most of the people will say, oh, it's so wonderful, I'm so happy for you, you know, and that's why so many people are getting divorced, you know, and people are so excited about, you know, when we get engaged or whatever, but they don't really think about, will they really be the right partners for each other. And Sandy Anderson was the only one that said to me, Pam, she said, I'll support you no matter what you do, no matter what decision. And she said, I really don't think he's the one for you. Well, of course, I really took that away and thought through it. And, you know, we had the invitations, and my mother kept saying, let's come on, we got to get more things done. And yet deep down, I doubted. I didn't have a real peace. And so finally, through the Word, God spoke to me through a verse about, talked about breaking a contract, and I could just see that Danny and I were going in separate directions. Christ was first in my life, and Christ wasn't first in his life. Even though he was indicating some spiritual things, God was never really the center of his life. And so, and to this day, I don't know if he really accepted Christ or if he accepted me and my beliefs. But I finally realized that if we were to get married, that contract with God that he had, which wasn't solid, would just kind of go by the wayside, and we'd get busy in our little affairs and making money and all that stuff, and it wouldn't be what it was supposed to. So I broke the engagement. It was very hard to do after 3 years of really getting to know him, and you know, especially I having the bridesmaids material, but it is never too late, right, Sandra? It's never, never too late. And, you know, I still have those invitations, would you believe that? Because I thought I could make something out of the paper in them or something. Well, it's really nice parchment paper. I hate to throw things away. No. It has no sentimental value. But the thing I thought I should do sometime is decoupage one and just write God's grace across it, because it was God's grace that I didn't marry him. And the thing that I continued to pray during that time was, God, I don't want second best. I want your first best. And I also prayed, God, guard my heart for the right guy. And God was very faithful to that. And I know, you know, if I had known then what I know now about dating and what God has to say about it, I would have not, wouldn't have ever gone through that or gotten involved in that relationship. But God taught me a lot through it, and he gave me some really deep convictions after that. And one, of course, was just that I would never date non-Christians or guys that weren't growing and that didn't have God on their heart and people on their heart. I mean, there are lots of Christians in the world, but you know, there are very few that really have God first in their lives and really care about giving their lives to people. And so I knew that that was one thing I wanted. And also just that I would let Jesus Christ be Lord of my dating and that whole area, and just, you know, putting that area on the altar and letting God have his way, because he only wants our best. And, you know, goodness, he made us. He surely knows what will be best in our future. And we can't figure that out, but he knows. And you know, just the difference in when Scott and I began to date and the peace I had and the joy and the oneness we had, because, you know, God was first in his life and my life, and we are going in the same direction. And, you know, we didn't get married till we were older. You know, I always wanted to be married by at least 21 and have kids, you know, right away. And, well, I was 27 when we got married, and I know that sounds old to some people, but it's not. I think these 25-year-olds are young now. But it was certainly worth waiting for. And God taught me a lot through that time, just that time of being single, and sometimes that can be a really hard time. But God always met my needs, and I think one thing that really helped me was I was involved with other people, and of course I was active with the BSU and the ministry there, and helping other girls out in the Christian life. But I think that really helped me to not feel the loneliness and all that could be involved if we didn't really get our lives involved in others. But another thing is I learned so much about people and relationships that has helped me so much in marriage. I had quite a few roommates, and there were some that I thought, why do they act the way they do? And, you know, Scott does some of those things. You know, I mean, no, I'm not saying. It's just a difference in our makeup, our personalities. And God gave me a lot of people to live with that had have his personality and temperament. And had I not gone through those relationships and learned from them, you know, it's easy to get into a relationship with a person and they're not like you, or you don't understand why they do that, what they do, and just kind of avoid them and not get to know them and understand them and love them. But in doing this, you know, God's probably just preparing you for a mate. And learn it now. It's much easier to learn now. Some people know. It's much easier to learn it now than it is later. So learn all you can now from relationships. And another thing I learned from that relationship was just in seeking counsel. And, you know, my parents, would you believe they cried when I broke up with this guy? And, you know, that about tore me up worse than ever. But, you know, had they ever really known my goals and his goals, they wouldn't have been for the relationship either. So I had kind of gone to them wanting their approval, but they never knew him that well, and they never knew what my goals were. And so be careful when you go to your parents to talk to them about this person you'd like to marry, and be sure you tell them all the facts about that person, and then just counsel from godly people. And, you know, thanks to Sandy Anderson. If it hadn't been for her, I would probably have married this other guy. And I'm just really thankful for people like her that were bold enough and brave enough to share that with me. And also, of course, just that time alone with the Lord, that's where we get so much of our instruction. And God is so faithful, and he won't, you know, he's not hiding his will from you, but he'll let you know, and you'll have peace and joy in that, and not the doubting that I had gone through so much. So, you know, I just encourage you to keep letting God be in control of your relationships, and it can really be glory, not gloom. This topic was romance, glory, or gloom, so.
You've got it on the page, but that's kind of as I begin to refer to things. I learned a lot of things by mistake. And so, the guitar almost went over. So I decided to put my mistakes in chart form. And that's what you have here tonight. One of the fellows who'd been with us in our dating seminar at Acts 1:8. This is a little bit different because some of these things have begun to gel. The more we deal with students in the area of dating, and Pam and I don't date very much anymore. We'd like to date more, but we have an 8-month-old son that kind of once in a while wants to take up our date night. And we need to find a babysitter, too. But I want to volunteer. So anyway, I began putting some things together. Just what are some relationship principles that, you know, why did I suffer so much in my dating relationship? Why was I, it seemed like whenever I turn around, I'd get hurt somehow. You know, like somebody took your heart. You know, I don't know if you've heard this old country western song, "You Done Stomped on My Heart." Have you heard that one? "You done smashed that sucker flat. You just sort of stomped on my aorta." You know, that one, that was me all the way. So on the left-hand side, we have basically the four levels of relationships, and there may be more than four, but just for the sake of discussion, I've just included four: the acquaintance, the casual, the close, and the intimate. And this is kind of dealing with friendships as well as dating relationships, and so it's kind of an it kind of applies to all things. And so you can follow on your paper. You basically have the thing. On the time and resources, Matthew 6:21. Anyone know that? Okay, for where your treasure is, there's your heart also. And when we begin to look at time and resources, I'm just going to explain these column by column. With an acquaintance, you spend very little time. That's why they're an acquaintance. And generally, you spend very little resources, too. And so, on this chart, that's what the arrow down means, and in your on your thing it means least. You just spend the least amount of time and a least amount of money and resources and these kinds of things on an acquaintance level relationship. Of course, the next one being casual, you spend a little bit more. Close, there's more, and an intimate, of course, the most. Now, the principle, and you might want to write this in your paper right above time and resources. The principle here is how we spend our time and money shows how we value the relationship. So how we spend our time and money, in other words, the time and resources, how we utilize those, determines what we value. Now here's what I mean by that. If you look at your checkbook, for instance, where your money goes, or let me rephrase this another way, are you going to put a lot of your money into something that's valueless? No. So you're going to put your money into something that is of value to you. Same way with your time. Are you going to spend a lot of time with something that's valueless? No. So you're going to spend a lot of time with something you value. Now, so how does this come in with dating? Well, I think you're going to see that as we go through the columns. So this principle then is how we spend our time and money shows how we value the relationship. The more we value the relationship, the more we put into it. Basically, the next column is self-disclosure. Proverbs 10:19 and Proverbs 20:23. Will someone look those up? Proverbs 10:19 and Proverbs 20:23. Okay, when you got it, read it. Is that right? Yeah, it's 21:23.
He who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from trouble.
Okay, who guards his mouth, tongue, guards his soul from trouble. Okay, Proverbs 10:19.
When men talk too much, sin is never far away. Common sense holds
it. Okay, so basically a couple verses on what comes out of your mouth, and that's what this column is about. And the principle, if you want to write it above in self-disclosure, is the as the depth of self-disclosure as you become, let's see, how can I put this? I like to use it in scientific terms. The deeper you go, the deeper the relationship. Okay? the deeper you go, the deeper the relationship. In other words, the deeper you go in self-disclosure, the deeper the level of relationship. Casual, close, intimate. So in other words, as you meet this acquaintance, you share facts, just plain facts with him. Casual, you move on to more ideas, opinions, and problems. In the close, you begin sharing those feelings and those struggles. And then finally, in the intimate type relationship, you're total sharing. You just share everything, or let it all hang out, so to speak. And the third column, then, is a freedom to confront or to share truth with someone. And the principle there is, as a relationship deepens, the freedom to share truth will also deepen. Okay, for instance, with an acquaintance, I don't have very much freedom to share truth. With a casual, you know, you can ask questions like, what's that smell? Or, well, maybe that's not a good question to ask. Well, you know, in summertime, that might be a good question. And when you get close to a person, you can make statements sometimes. You know, you say, you need to use deodorant. And, you know, this is just an example. And then intimate, you can require accountability. Why didn't you use deodorant today? Now, that's an absurd example, though. It shows you, though, that you don't talk like that to someone that you don't have a very deep relationship with, do you? And sometimes you never talk to anyone that way. That's right. But in a sense, in a relationship, there needs to be that freedom to confront. Okay? Then the commitment to exclusiveness, the fourth column. And basically, the principle here is to communicate. Very easy to communicate. So you can tell with an acquaintance level, of course, there's no exclusiveness there. On a casual level, there's none. Close, there's some, and then more. And then, of course, intimate, there's most. That's when you are totally committed to one another. And then the physical contact, or the romantic love, glory or gloom. And that's pretty self-explanatory. No with the acquaintance, no with the casual. Some more in intimate. Let me make a correction there. On your graphs, you might want to see engagement. I'm not saying most on engagement. There needs to be more written across from that, a new column there. I made a mistake there. And so the principle there is to communicate with the person, just to communicate with them. And this is generally done by the guy. In other words, communicate the commitment. And it's generally done by the guy, not the girl. I know it's frustrating for the girls, but it needs to be done by the guy. And then the last one being toward marriage. Okay, and then that verse deals with the man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And we see that dating is not necessary in acquaintance. It's possible. Possible, but not necessary with casual, close dating and regular dating, and then, of course, intimate would be engagement and marriage. So that's basically what the chart is. There's really no principle towards marriages that I had thought through. So now as we go back and we begin to look at these things, we can, from my own personal experience, I can see that there are times when I have violated many of the levels, many of these principles here. Now let's look at back at time and resources. I don't know if this is a familiar circumstance with you, but you know, there were times in my dating life when you get to meet someone and you just seem to click off, you know, you just seem to really hit it off well, and then next thing you know, you're spending buku bunches of time with them. Okay? And some guys, you know, spend buku bunches of money as well as buku bunches of time. And the problem is with that is, you know, you could almost be in an acquaintance or casual type of a friendship, but you're spending closer intimate amount of time with them. And that can begin to cause some problems across the board as we begin looking into the other areas. For instance, you know, physical contact. The more time you tend to spend with someone, there's a tendency towards deeper physical contact with them. So you can maybe not have only known someone 2 or 3 weeks, and if you're around them, you know, 2 or 3 hours a day or something like that, you know, there is a real temptation there. But if you begin looking at self-disclosure, you probably not got a lot of time to talk to them about certain things. Maybe you have a lot of similar interests. But anyway, you can see how these can be violated. You'd be spending too much time. Now, one, I met this girl, and she was from out of state. She was from a state that's south of here, I think, a big one. And I had this friend who was a law student. He was a last year law student, and he had a part-time job as a legal assistant. Is that what they call them, where they do case studies for lawyers and stuff? And so he had this key to this large office building. And he, you know, so I used to go up and study. I was in graduate school at the time, and I'd go up and study with him in the law office library up there. Well, the interesting thing is they had a Watts line there that you could call any place in the United States and was free. Well, I called this girl in the state south of us. And, of course, she didn't know it was free. I didn't tell her that. And so I was communicating something. You know, all it was costing me was a little time, 15 or 20 minutes, a couple times a week, or maybe half hour, something like that. But for her, you know, it was the time and the money. She thought, boy, this guy must really be serious. You know, he's calling me long distance and talking to me on the telephone, and boy, this thing must really be serious. And me, it was just, hey, you know, this isn't costing me hardly anything. You know, and she's a good friend. But there were, this is one of my mistakes. She decided she was going to move to Nebraska, believe it or not, and so she did. And so that kind of put me on the back pedal, you know, those kinds of things. And so I can testify from personal experience that it's hard. It's hard not to communicate certain things to certain people. You have to be careful about what you communicate, about how you spend your time and your resources with them. Something else is a long-distance relationship. You know, I'm not saying they're impossible, but they're hard, aren't they? They really are. And, you know, when someone travels 400 miles to see you, does that say something to you? Yeah, they've committed quite a bit of time and resources to come and see you. Now, they may only think, well, this is just to get to know you better as a friend. And it really needs to be communicated that that is what it is. You know, it is possible, but it's hard. So you have to almost go overboard in communicating with them. This is where we are on the friendship level. You know, we're at casual, and you're just like, you know, everybody else, not mutually exclusive dating or any of this other kinds of stuff. We're just trying to get, if you want to spend your money just to get to know me like that, you know, that's okay. But there's no commitment there. And so things like this need to go over and over and over again, because you can really cause hurts. Now, self-disclosure, how that can be violated. Boy, you know, I was one of these people that, you know, I didn't care about talking about the time of day and the weather and these kinds of things. You know, I wanted to get right down into those gut level feelings. Where was that person at? You know, I didn't care to talk about all those little other things. I just wanted to talk about those deep things. Okay? And so you can imagine what that began to communicate to a person. You know, the girl would think, and this happened a few times, she'd think, boy, I must really be special. You know, this guy really understands me. He really has a way of drawing me out. And you know, here we only had one or two dates, and here we are talking about these deep things. Boy, this must be a really special relationship. And she just didn't realize I talked to everybody like that. You know, that's just the way I talked. And so that can be a real source of conflict and hurt eventually, because you're not on the same level. You're not realizing that your relationship is on the same level. Freedom to confront. I never did like to do that. And so a lot of times things would go on in a relationship where I you know, if she did something I didn't like, I never confronted it. And I just kind of let that thing slide. And as a result, there was not much mutual respect, if you want to call it that. But, you know, because that's a good way to make enemies, isn't it? Confront them with the truth. And so as a result, I didn't learn how to do that. I kind of shied away from conflict. I saw conflict coming, I turned around and went the other way. So, you know, having conflict in a relationship doesn't mean it's unhealthy. It means it's healthy. Depends on how much conflict you have. You know, when that, books come flying at your head, then you know that it may be unhealthy for me. So confront with gentleness. Okay, commitment to exclusiveness. And I think that's pretty self-explanatory. And, of course, the physical contact. You know, so many times when you violate, you spend a lot of time with a person and talk a lot about your feelings and struggles and those kinds of things. There's just a natural pull for you to go on the same level that you've been on in the area of self-disclosure, in the area of the physical. Now, does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so if you share real deep, intimate things, there's a natural pull for you to get deep and intimate in the physical, because that's just kind of the next secondary outgrowth of those things. Okay? Now, I'm going to give two case studies for you. And again, I don't know anybody's dating situation here. And Dave's already married. Linda doesn't date. Is that right? You're too spiritual? Yeah, okay. And I married a women's worker. She was at Kansas State, you know, and when I, she was at Kansas State, and then she moved to University of Nebraska and was on staff there with Brett Yon. And, you know, I can always remember just before I was going to take her out, I said, you know, Mary Yon says, well, why don't you date Pam? Why don't you date Pam? Nelson was her name at the time. And I said, oh, man, I couldn't do that. She's too godly. I mean, you know, she doesn't date. She said, she's not that godly. So anyway, okay, Linda, did I say it right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, first level, time and resources. Okay, now this is a case study. I just want you to mark, I'm going to be couple A, okay? Couple A. So you put an A in the box, and under time and resources, put an A under close. Or not, you know, in the box, under time and resources, put an A in that box where it says more. Okay, and self-disclosure. Put an A-girl in casual. In other words, ideas, opinions, and problems. So put it over, like, be right here. And then put A-boy, in other words, he's the guy in couple A, under feelings and struggles, under the close, under self-disclosure. In freedom to confront, put an A in ask questions, for the casual. In commitment to exclusiveness, put A-girl in casual, or no, and put A-boy in more, in close. You done stomped on my heart, right? Yeah. Okay. Physical contact, put an A on some for both, because they're both involved in that. Okay? And then, so now, that's case study one. So tell me, what does this relationship look like? That's not a, what, theoretical question. I want you to analyze this relationship. This is a true relationship. So what's happening in this relationship? What kind of conflicts are they having? Okay, the guy is miserable. That's true. Okay, why is the guy miserable? Okay, she's in love, but he ain't. She's in love, he's in love, but she ain't. Okay. I have a peach and spediment sometimes. Okay. Anyway, what else? You know, she's the kind of girl that would say, each date I have with you is better than the next. Does anybody get that? Better than the next? Means it's getting worse and worse. Okay. Okay, anything else about them? Okay, they can't talk about it. Why not? Okay. Yeah, he's sharing too much, and she's evidently very non-communicative or less communicative than what he is. And there's not really a method there. You know, they don't feel free to confront one another. Right. So her time commitment is farther than either her, what, commitment to exclusiveness and self-disclosure. Now, what does that mean? Right. That's right. Okay, the guy's confused because he sees more commitment in time than what's really true in the commitment in the relationship. Okay, and he sees that in the physical context. So what's it say about the girl? No, go ahead, John. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. And do you think she intends to do this? I mean, do you think she's consciously going, let's see, we're here on this chart here, and we're... No. No. Both Christians, these are both Christian things. So what's the girl doing? Basically, she's enjoying the attention. That's right. She has nothing better to do. Right? Yeah, she's enjoying it and he's miserable. Now, of course, these things you can switch because you probably know relationships that are similar. Anyone else? See anything else? Yeah. Girls are supposed to be the last ones into the relationships and the first ones out. Does anyone have the interpretation? In other words, what the fellow may be saying, person may be saying, is that she needs to follow. In other words, he leads in the relationship through the levels. And, go ahead, you know, and then she, of course, if she realizes that that's not the way God's leading, she needs to, you know, to come out. I can see that. Yes?
Yeah, I was just
going
to say,
it's not like a generalization, but the guy seems to have to initiate the date by making the call. So right. Evidently, you know, it's kind of like, in other words, who initiates?
Mike.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. What did I do? Okay, anyone else on this? Did we milk it for all it's worth? Okay, couple B. Time and resources, intimate. B. Self-disclosure, feelings and struggles. Freedom to confront, no. I mean, these are real life things, but I didn't make these up. Commitment to exclusiveness is casual, no. And physical contact is close, more. Okay, what kind of problems do we have here? Yeah, go on group dates a lot. That's what they need to do. Okay, anyone see anything? What's happening in this relationship? Okay, they'll share their feelings and struggles. They what? Sorry? Okay, but they won't answer to each other. Okay. How much freedom would this couple have in sharing something that would be a conflict? They wouldn't, okay? It's interesting, when they came to us, they both, and they needed help, one of them was saying, I'm not sure I want to be in this relationship anymore, and the other one was saying, I'm not sure I want to be in this relationship anymore, but I don't want to hurt this other person. They both didn't want to hurt each other, but they both wanted out. And they hadn't told each other. So they just assumed the other one wanted to be in it too. Okay? Anything else? You kind of get how this diagram works. Okay. You can begin to manipulate then. You can see how people can use this to manipulate. Or, you know, they don't do it consciously, they do it subconsciously. Because they want to have close and intimate relationships, but they may want them a little too fast. So the thing that I had to learn, for instance, in the area of self-disclosure, is I had to learn how to talk on the areas of facts first, and ideas and opinions and problems, and not any farther than what the relationship was. Now, as one interesting thing is that when I first dated Pam, we were already casual friends, which in some respects today I've learned that that's not really a super common thing either. You know, one of the guys in the that I know, it's really interesting. He'll be around a lot of girls in the fellowship, but then when he dates somebody, it'd be almost with a perfect stranger. I mean, it's like your dating and your friendships are totally two different things. I mean, do you see that happening here? Where, you know, it's kind of like you don't want to date. It's like dating your brothers and sisters or something. You know, they think in these Christian groups or something, that it's kind of hands off on the sisters there. That's not true here, is it, girls? No, girls say that's not true here. It's not hands off. Well, yeah, hands off in a way, but in other words, they'll date. Okay. Okay, so you got to be careful about the levels. Now, for instance, with couple A, what level should they have remained on? Okay, they should have stayed on the casual level. And see, what the guy should have done is never drop below that and continued going and tried to manipulate her to drop down in the levels of relationship. That's kind of one of those areas where you have to kind of dip your toe in the water. When I started dating Pam, it was at that point, you know, I made a commitment to communicate to her where we were in the relationship at all times. Because I've been through enough relationships. You know, one time Brett Yon came to me and says, "Okay, Scott, you know, you're living, you know, in our basement, and we're getting letters from different girls throughout the United States. And where is the, you know, are you serious with anyone? Are you romantically, involved with any of these girls? Are they just friends?" And so on and so on. I said, "Well, they're just good friends." He said, "Do they know that?" "I don't know. I thought you just made friends. I mean, you just had good friends or something." And so I began to think, well, maybe they don't. So I say, "Well, God, I'll tell them exactly where we are in the relationship, whether it's if I'm romantically interested, they're just good friends and these kinds." So miraculously, God brought each one of these five girls from all over in contact with me that week. That week that Brett shared that with me, and I shared with them, I'm not romantically interested, but we're just good friends. My life became very lonely very quickly. See, I didn't realize that they had something else in mind. And so pretty soon I was like Adam, you know, I was asleep, and there was nobody around. But that was good. That's what I needed. I really did need that, because that taught me that I needed to communicate with him. And so when I was with Pam, I began saying, well, you know, I remember the first time I told her I liked her. Kind of. And we were underneath the hood of an Oldsmobile, about a 74 Oldsmobile or something. I was fixing it, and her head was underneath there. And I know she doesn't like anything about cars and engines and stuff, so she had to be under there for some reason. And it was actually her roommate's car, and I was fixing it. And the night before, I'd called her up, and I tried to tell her that I liked her. But, you know, I talked to her for 45 minutes, and I went around every bush I could figure out and never quite came across with it. And she didn't quite understand it either. So she had mentioned something about this conversation we were talking about, and I says, well, you know, it's just hard for a guy to tell a girl that he likes her. So so then she, all of a sudden, she had to go into the house. You know, she went, "Oh, he likes me, look." She didn't tell me that, but that's what she did on the way upstairs. So then finally, in our relationship, there came a time, you know, we began dating, and It was right at the beginning of summer, and the students, most of the students were out of town, and of course she was on staff. And you know what kind of scandals that'd be, right, Linda? You start dating somebody, you know, and the noise gets around and people start talking and stuff. And so God really worked it out with us. I won't pick on you anymore. But God really started working, you know, in that we just, you know, we really began to really enjoy each other's company and so forth and so on. And yet, old Dottie here, she was back in Nebraska City and she didn't even know about it. And she was one of the gals on the ministry team. Then finally Pam, I think, wrote her a letter or something. So everything was kind of hush-hush, which was really good. But sometime in June, you know, I was really sensing that, you know, I really like this girl. And so I decided to do something bold. And, you know, this girl's a full-time Christian worker, you know. So I asked her to pray about holding hands. She prayed about it for a long time. A few weeks later, then she said, "We'll bring it up again." And so she prayed about it. I just asked her to pray about it because, you know, I didn't know quite how to do this. This whole Christian dating thing was new to me, and I'd blown it so many times. And so I didn't want to rush into things. And so finally, we had our confrontation, and she says, "Well, what does holding hands mean to you?" Holding hands, what does it mean to me? Well, you know, I came to the conclusion that I really didn't know what holding hands meant to me. You know, I've been involved in dating as a non-Christian and had really, taken a lot of things for granted. And so as a result, I didn't really have very much meaning to that at all. It didn't mean very much to me. And so she said, she brought this to my attention. Well, what does it mean? And so... So finally, you know, I had to come up with some kind of definition for what it meant. And I realized it really didn't mean that much to me. So why do it, right? But then she said, well, when I hold hands with a person, I want them to know that they're very, very special. And I came close in another relationship, and I'm just not going to do that again. I'm going to be careful. And so to me, it's something very special. Well, you know, when we finally held hands, it really, really meant something to both of us. We really communicated what we were doing. It wasn't just something that was taken for granted. It was something that was beautiful and good. So, of course, then after that it was defining what does I love you mean to you? And defining some of these other things. So we really sense that we were communicating. God really used that to deepen our communication with one another and help us work through some of those things. Plus, it had meaning. Plus, each little act, each little physical expression, whatever it was, had meaning. And therefore, it was real satisfying. And it wasn't, we didn't need to go deeper into the physical because the small things had meaning. Okay? So, I think our time's about up. Is that right, Dave? Yeah, close. So is there any questions right now? A few questions, yeah.
Yeah, you said that in the first case study that the relationship should remain on the premises. How do you know when to stop? I mean, like, it seems to me it would be a natural progression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one person would just kind of stop, the other person keeps going and you lose, you know. How do you know when to stop if you watch for signs or...
Yeah. Yeah, if the guy is leading, say, like with Pam, I would test the waters, so to speak. Yeah, and see, actually, the commitment to exclusiveness, that column I probably went down first. You understand what I'm saying? So in other words, I said, you know, hey, I'm really not interested in dating any other girls. I want to get to know you a lot better, and I'm not going to be dating anyone else. That's where I'm at. And she, you know, and then she didn't have to answer right away, and I just said, I just want you to know that's where I'm at. And, you know, it was like me sticking out my neck and, you know, the guillotine, I could see it, you know, any minute it could happen. But about a week or two later, says, you know, I'm there too.
That's the one. Would you rank them? Which one would you test first? Which way would you go?
Well, I guess I would say the commitment to exclusiveness would be the one that I would try to go down. in testing the water, so to speak, in letting them know exactly where you're at. Not too fast, too soon, but as you go down, and make sure that the other areas stay on the pretty much the same level. Again, this is just a diagram, and, you know, things are going to vary a little bit, but when you have the extremes, you know, like you see in example B, you know, that's way too extreme, those kinds of stuff. So you got to, you know, I would say in self-disclosure, you need to, you know, guard your heart a little bit. Okay, both of these cases ended up breaking up. Both of these ones, so they split. The girl in case A moved 2 or 3 states away, went to college, didn't even consider what his feelings were. You know, that was, you know, that's what you wanted to do, and so that kind of helped end things a little bit, which I was glad, because, you know, and I sure hated to see him suffer. But then as a result, he learned a lot of principles about it, about sharing your heart too much too soon.
I may have heard you wrong, but I think I've heard this before, about the guy is responsible for establishing, the communicating the level of the relationship back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, what I'm... close level, Hal, yeah. Whatever you do, don't use this like that. That's not what I'm saying. But the... you know, like someone said, be real suave and debonair, you know, suave and debonair about the whole thing, you know. But, see, I'm the same way. And the reason that God brought me in a relationship with Pam and made her cautious is so that I have to stick out my neck, so that I learn how to lead the relationship, so that when we got married, that was just a natural thing. See, and before that, I dated a lot of dominant, controlling type girls. And a lot of times they initiated the relationship and not me. You know, I waited till I saw that they really liked me a lot, and then I would ask them out, and it was pretty safe bit. And so, you know, I didn't take a lot of chances. But see, then with her, I knew she wasn't going to ask me out. And for me, I just thought, boy, you know, I just really had a hard time just even asking her out, because it was... really hard thing, because that could have been, you know, I think, guys, is that pretty much true? When you're initiating a new relationship, you know, your heart's in your throat, and, you know, you feel sweaty and all over, and it hurts, you know, when you do that, because you know that someone could stomp on your heart. And, you know, rejection hurts. But we need to learn, I think that's one of the things, as men, we need to learn how to initiate and take a chance. And, boy, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy. And that's where sometimes we have to think through what we do. And, you know, instead of saying, well, we're on this casual relationship or something like that, just say, well, you know, I'd like to get to know you better. I really would enjoy getting to know you better. Would you mind if we, you know, if I spent a little bit more time with you? I mean, because I don't know where it's going to lead. I don't know anything. I just want to get to know you better. That's it. And period. Okay, anyone else? Yes.
Scott, it seems like that it's important that a lot of what you're aiming for is intimacy. And what that involves is being able to just be vulnerable and not afraid of the other person knowing anything about you. And at least with that in mind, it would seem like putting yourself in a position to be vulnerable and learning to do that without fear.
That's right.
And so it's hard to figure out how to get there in
the way. Right. Yeah, that's the overlying thing is to be transparent and vulnerable in this whole thing. And you just share where you're at most of the time. I mean, try to, because, you know, it's hard. Being vulnerable is hard, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Thank you. Anyone else? Everybody has it all together? You know, it's interesting. I normally bring a handout and said the number one problem in dating, and I flopped this thing on there. For some of you guys that are in biochem, it's a tetraiodotyrosine. You know, it's a hormone, and that tends to be one of the major causes of problems in relationships, hormones, and very bluntly, but that's what it is. And you know, it's interesting when we were in Zambia and all these guys were observing. You know. And so there was this this Christian student fellowship body there, and they were doing a number of different things. And you know, it was really interesting that some of the very best-looking girls, and you know, the guys there, what they do is they pray, and then God leads them to their wives. You know, yeah, you know, I feel that God leads. You know, some girls, the first thing they hear from the guy, the first words almost is, you know, will you be my wife? Because they don't have a dating structure there. Okay. And so, you know, that's all she hears. Well, you know, it's very interesting that God led in this one case. He led three guys to the same girl. She was one of the best-looking girls in the whole group. So what I'm saying is that can be a real... We've got to be careful. You know, God doesn't lead through the hormones necessarily. And, you know, there's some real confusion because some... You know, these brothers in Christ there in Zambia were really perplexed because they thought it was God. It was God that told me to marry this girl. Well, he told him, and he told him, and he told him to. And, you know, they couldn't seem to correlate that she happened to be the best-looking girl in the whole group. There is a correlation there. So, okay? Why don't we close with a word of prayer, and since we're over time. Father, we do thank you and praise you that you've instituted courtship and the marriage relationship. And Lord, we just desire to bring glory and honor to you in our actions. And Lord, not to defraud one another or to hurt one another. And Lord, that our lives would be in glory and honor to you in whatever we do. So Lord, I just thank you that you came to lead us into your truth. You came to lead us into the right relationships. And so, Lord, we ask that you would continue to work in the lives here of those who are still in the courting, dating process. Lord, that you would really give them a clear vision to know just what's happening in their relationships. And, Lord, burn it on their hearts to consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. That as a result of any relationship, that you would be glorified and that the individuals would be built up and walk strongly and mightily with you. So, Father, we do thank you and praise you for your Son, Christ, and the relationship that we have with him, and that relationship allows us to have a relationship with one another. God, we praise you and thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.